The first is the normal thing of just signing up for children and helping out with children. There's also sign up for reading. And if you didn't get the email, Saturday the 17th at 6 o'clock at the Seneca House is the drumming circle. It was moved from Friday so that Rod could make it. We're really excited about the drumming circle, so please, if you can, mark that off. They have a lot of cool things to announce and cool things to talk about. So it'd be good if you could be there. And then there's also a sign up for cooking chicken and such. Now, if you look at the website, you'll notice that there's a new link that goes to Art Night. The village artists and those hoping someday to be artists, here, Benji, I'll start this with you, are starting Art Night up again. And it's going to be structured in a kind of a different way. It's going to happen the last Friday of every month and the second Sunday morning, right? Is that correct? Of every fourth Friday, second Sunday. And what's going to happen is on the Friday night, there's going to be an opportunity for you to get some instruction. And then on the Sunday mornings, they're going to take field trips to different places like the Desert Museum or up to Mount Lemmon. And there'll also be some artists helping, instructing people. And so Benji, on the, I guess, the fourth Friday of February, is going to be doing the first one. It's going to be at Blanca and Joel's house. And there'll be maps and all that kind of stuff for you. And he's going to be doing it on value. So if you want a little instruction on value, what they're encouraging is that even if you don't think you're an artist, if you want to learn to just express yourself or you want just the opportunity to think around, please don't be intimidated. Come. There will always be somebody to help you. You can try out different things, find out what you like, just be creative for the heck of it. So those will be exciting things to do. So go to that, and you'll get emails about it and such. So I have a little handout here and a receipt. I didn't fold them. That'll be all right. You can take one and fold it in half. Okay, so tonight we are going to be talking about Matthew 26, but I'm going to have you quickly just talk amongst yourself while I get myself a drink. Okay, got it all folded, got all your talking done. We're going to be doing Matthew chapter 26, the first 16 verses. But before we get into that, I want to talk to you about agendas. All of us have agendas. All of us have plans and for our future, but more importantly, most of us have agendas for each other. Most of us who are married have agendas for our spouses. We have plans for them, and we want them to respond to us in certain ways. A lot of us have agendas for life and how life should operate for us. And when I talk about agenda tonight, really what I like to translate it into is kind of a demand. Because you can have a good agenda, but I'm talking most of us have a whole set of bad agendas. We have this whole set of demands that life work a certain way for us, and we have plans set out for us. Let me give you an example. When I was, I think, my freshman year of college, my little brother came to me and he said, he had never really been interested in basketball, but he said, I really want to be a good basketball player. And I said, okay, fine. We went out to the basketball court and we taped it all off. And they said, you shoot 500 shots from every spot here and you do these layups and you do these drills every day. And I was like, I'm going to make sure you really don't, you know, do this at all. Well, I didn't realize that my little brother, my littlest, not the middle, had sort of a little obsessive compulsive thing in him. And so he really did shoot 500 shots from every spot. And I started making money off him by taking the horse games. But anyway, he wanted to play basketball too, and he wanted to know if I'd coach, so I started coaching. Well, he started doing better and better and better, and so I thought, well, you know what? There might be a future in this. And so, you know, he started making basketball teams at school, and I got more and more and more connected to his progress and how well he was doing, because I was like, it wasn't just that I was hoping that he would make it to college and maybe get a scholarship and do well. I wanted to be part of that, and I wanted some recognition for how well I had gotten him on the track. Well, while he was doing so well at basketball, he also was becoming quite an accomplished pianist. And that was starting to compete with basketball. And so we started getting in these conflicts because he was not cooperating, because he became less and less interested in basketball by his sophomore year of high school and more interested in music, and I had nothing to do with music. And so I wasn't going to be able to get any credit, and I wasn't going to actually get to live very vicariously through him. And so there was all these like arguments that we would have, and no, you need to go play basketball, and why aren't you doing this, and I got very wrapped up in that. And so when he kind of kiboshed all of it, I kind of got angry. And so a lot of us have these agendas, way we want things to go. And so as we look at tonight's little story, I want you to keep that in mind, that we all have agendas. Now the other thing that you should keep in mind is, or ask yourself, is what kind of demands and agendas do you have in your life for other people, for your friends, for Jesus, for your spouses, for your brothers and sisters, for life in general? What kind of demands have you developed or created and you live on, and that you would get very upset if they don't work out the way you want them to? Let's read a little of Matthew 26. When Jesus had finished saying all these things, he said to his disciples, now all these things, or those great parables in chapter 25 about goats going to hell and sheep going to heaven, and how many know the cake song for that? How impressive. Two people know the cake song. How many know who cake is? Wow, just a few more of you know who cake is. Okay, anyway, it's a great song. It's a little disturbing to listen to, but it's good. As you know, the Passover is 2 days away, and the Son of Man will be handed over to be crucified. Then the chief priests and the elders of the people assembled in the palace of the high priest, whose name was Caiaphas, and they plotted to arrest Jesus in some sly way and kill him. But not during the feast, they said, or there may be a riot among the people. So up to this point, Jesus has pretty much laid out what the kingdom of God is going to look like. And the Pharisees and the rulers have a certain agenda, right? What they want to do is hang on to power as long as possible. Now, agendas and the ways of demands that we develop in life do come from good things. They come from good longings. The leaders of the Jewish people just want to be free, to be out of under the thumb of the Romans. But right now they're in an uneasy power, and they have to hang on to it for everything to work right, for them to hang on to the temple, for them to keep the Jewish way of living the way it's supposed to be in their mind. And so their agenda is messed up. Jesus served as a block in their agenda. So one clue that you have a wrong agenda is when you want to kill someone, you know that you probably have the wrong demands of life. If you've decided someone's messing something up and you want to kill them, you ought to think about what you're demanding in life. So Jesus And also, Jesus has this really strange way of messing up everybody's demands on life. And so he's messing up the leaders and the priests, so they decide they want to kill him. So verse 6, while Jesus was in Bethany, in the home of a man known as Simon the Leper, a woman came to him with an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume, which she poured on his head as he was reclining at the table. When the disciples saw this, they were very indignant. Why this waste, they asked. The perfume could have been sold at a high price and the money given to the poor. Okay, so what happens here? There's a whole bunch of things that happen in this story. And then there's Ruth throwing things. The disciples have an agenda, and it's going to sort of come out in this story a little bit. But just to look at just a few things to kind of clarify them. Simon the leper, most likely, I mean, if he's a leper, he's not going to have a house, because he's in a leper colony, and he's unclean. So most likely it means he had really rough skin. Maybe he had a life of bad acne. And so maybe it means Simon, the guy with bad acne. Whatever it was, Jesus ends up at his house. And he's eating dinner. And he's doing it in every man's dream of eating dinner. He's laying down, right? Because this is what men want to do. Men want to eat reclined so that they can stuff themselves and roll over. That is like the desire of every man, at least American man. Especially during the Super Bowl. But it's not every man's desire for a woman to come and dump a lot of perfume on his head while he's eating. This is not necessarily, you know, while he's chomping down on his lamb, pouring perfume on his head is not necessarily what he wants. But what happens here? We have this woman, and she pours this perfume. Now, when they're saying this money could be given to the poor, this is expensive perfume. And they're saying, well, this could be given to the poor. And they're indignant. They're upset about it. Now, it doesn't say they were upset about the smell, which would be why I'd be indignant, because I have good headaches. So it's not like the disciples had, like, perfume allergies, and they were upset about that. They were upset about something different. And Jesus kind of reveals why that is. Verse 10, aware of this, Jesus said to them, why are you bothering this woman? She has done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you will always have with you, but you will not always have me. When she poured this perfume on my body, she did it to prepare me for burial. I tell you the truth, whenever the gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her. If you remember, well, let me just put this here. If you have a lot of agendas, what happens is you don't listen very well. The more demands that you put on people, the less listening you do to where they're at and what they're saying. So, if you go back to Matthew chapter 20, verse 17, Jesus says, I'm going to die. And right after he says, I'm going to die, James and John show up with their mom, and they say, I want to be on the right and left. Now, what is it that James and John really, really want from Jesus? Well, they want some power. But even more than that, they want intimacy. Now, you remember also in Matthew, Peter says to Jesus, we've given up everything, so what's in it for us? The disciples have this sense that if they're going to follow this kingdom of God, they're going to get something. And I think what they really, really want, you know, maybe not in the first level, but on the second level, is they want close intimacy with the person who's going to be the Messiah, or who is the Messiah. They want intimacy. Now, what does this woman get? This woman gets intimacy. She goes and she pours perfume. Now, just to expand the story just slightly, you have to understand that this story shows up four times in the Gospel. Matthew and Mark are the same event. But there are two different events that happen, and we can just only guess exactly what they're like. So let's read John 12 really quickly, because I think this will shed some light on it. 6 days before Passover, Jesus arrived at Bethany, same place where Lazarus lived, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. Here a dinner was given in Jesus' honor. Martha served, while Lazarus was among those reclining at the table with him. Then Mary took about a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume, and she poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of perfume. But one of the disciples, Judas Iscariot, who was later to betray him, objected, "Why wasn't the perfume sold and the money given to the poor? It was worth a year's wage." So this is $30,000 worth of perfume that this woman pours on Jesus. And then she wipes his feet with her hair. Now, this could be a different event. Now, if this is a different event, Jesus, one of the keys to Jesus' ministry is that he smells very good. That on his journey into Jerusalem at the end of his life, the reason that people were crowding around him was because he smelled good. Maybe. But the real thing here that's very interesting is that she is getting intimacy. Now, it's a pretty awkward intimacy because a Jewish woman who's single keeps her hair up. And a Jewish woman who's married keeps her hair covered except when she's at home. Why does she do that? Because a Jewish woman's hair is her glory. When she gets married, she goes through this whole purification and bathing where they scrape all the dirt from her fingernails and they scrub her down really good and they take off any kind of makeup and then they clothe her and she goes into the wedding chamber and her husband is the one who lets her hair down and her whole glory pours out over her. And so the hair is a very erotic thing. So single women kept their hair up. So here is a woman in this group of men taking her hair down and washing the feet of Jesus. That's seriously intimate. So, what is the agenda of the disciples? Well, they want what she's just stepping in and doing. And so they become indignant. So, another clue is, if you get angry at somebody, if you become indignant with someone, you might want to think about, what am I expecting? It should be a clue that you have some demands on life. Now, I want to talk about the woman really quick, outside of the genders. I have to say that this would be awkward in the 21st century, let alone in the first century. I mean, can you imagine we're all sitting around the table, and then one of you gets up and pours perfume on Rod and starts cleaning his feet? We would all just be a little uncomfortable. So you have to think that everybody was uncomfortable. But they're mad at her for wasting the perfume. They're mad at her for wasting money. Now, Jesus says something really interesting, and I think this is really key. He says, "Why are you bothering this woman?" The word for bothering, if you go look it up in the Strong's Concordance and the Strong's Greek Dictionary, you find that the first definition is beat down. Why are you beating this woman down? She's doing a beautiful thing for me. Or to be translated, she's doing a good deed. The cool thing about this is that when this expression happens, Jesus is willing to defend this woman. Now, the key, I think, to this woman is she doesn't have an agenda for Jesus. And because she doesn't have an agenda, she's able to hear. And so she hears the first verse. When Jesus saying all these things, he said to his disciples, "As you know, the Passover is 2 days away, and the Son of Man will be handed over to be crucified." Now, twice or three times, I think, he's already said, "I'm going to die." But for the disciples who have a different agenda for Jesus, somehow this is over their head. But this woman hears it. Now, the question is, does this woman really want him to die? No. Now, there are a couple options. She can try to convince him, "Please don't die. Please don't do this. There's another way. We can figure this out." This is what the disciples did. But no, she said, "Okay, he's going to die." And it's almost like she said, "I do not want to put perfume on him while he's dead. I want him to know how much I love him while he's alive. And so I'm going to offer this very intimate expression that's very beautiful." And so one of the things that I think that happens when you and I begin to deconstruct our agendas is that it really opens up an opportunity for us to actually worship God in a really pure way. It gives us an opportunity to love people around us in a way that doesn't have a lot of barriers, because what we're doing is removing the demands on each other. We're removing, like, you need to do this for me to offer myself to you. And the cool thing about all of that is that Jesus will defend you, that there is a defense, that if you go ahead and offer yourself in a very awkward way, whatever that looks like for you, without agendas, Jesus will defend you. There is a defense to that. So let's continue a little story here. Then one of the 12, the one called Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priest and asked, "What are you willing to give me if I hand him over to you?" So they counted out for him 30 silver coins. From then on, Judas watched for an opportunity to hand him over. So we have Judas's agenda. We know from, if you read the little rest of the part of John 12, that Judas was stealing money from, whatever, the bank accounts of Jesus and the disciples. And so what he was seeing as he saw this event with the woman, and as he's seen what Jesus has been saying about the kingdom of God, is that him making money is not going to be part of the operandus of Jesus. So his agenda is messed up. So if you go to plot to kill someone or hurt someone, you might want to think about what kind of agenda you have. But the real question is, okay, so we're not supposed to have demands on people. We're not supposed to have these demands that people and Jesus and the world work the way we want it to, and that's great. And if we, you know, if we deconstruct those, it's going to make us better listeners. We're going to hear one another better, and we're going to be able to respond to the condition of people and to Jesus in a good way. But, okay, but how does one really get to even wanting to deconstruct your agendas? Because we get caught up in them all the time, in even the simplest ways. For instance, recently, on Saturday, there was a band practice in my house. Now, the band is going to be going up to Phoenix on Saturday to play in the 150th celebration of the CRC Church, right? The 150th Christian Reformed Church. Now, we're not Christian Reformed, but they like us, and so they want us to do that because they think we're the future of things. So we're going to be playing our music there, and Rod will be giving 7 minutes of something. And so anyway, Susan and I were talking about band practice on Friday, and we were chatting, and the agenda I had was, I realized this, it was, okay, Susan, you're just going to make sure that we get this all together. And so somewhere in there, she said, "I'm going to get bagels." So on Saturday, she said, "I'm leaving to get bagels." And I'm trying to get things set up. And I was like, "What do you mean you're leaving to get bagels? Like, you're supposed to make this work for me." And she's like, "No, I told you that you're supposed to get bagels. I'm going to go get bagels." And I said, "I don't remember you telling me that." Well, it's because we were going to set up the plan to get this done, and I didn't hear about bagels because, you know, she didn't say anything about bagels. But, and this is a simple example of how that our agendas for making life work, our demands on life, really, we miss a lot of what people are saying. So how do we get to the point where we actually want to deconstruct that at any level? Well, this is like the last story is out of Luke. And this actually seems like it happened earlier on in Jesus' ministry. My conclusion is there was 2 to 3 times that a woman comes in and dumps perfume on Jesus. So really, I think he does smell good. But let me just read this to you, because I think inside of this particular one is the clue to how we can get to the point where we actually want to deconstruct agendas in our life. "Now, one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him. So he went to the Pharisee's house and reclined at a table. When a woman who had lived a sinful life in the town learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house, she bought an alabaster jar of perfume, and as she stood behind him at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair and kissed them and poured perfume on them. When the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, 'If this man were a prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she is a sinner. Jesus answered him, Simon, I have something to tell you. Tell me, teacher, he said. Two men owed money to a certain moneylender. One owed him 500 denarii and the other 50. Neither of them had the money to pay him back, so he canceled the debt of both. Now which of them will love him more? Simon replied, I suppose the one who had the bigger debt canceled. You have judged correctly, Jesus said. Then he turned towards the woman and said to Simon, Do you see this woman? I came into your house, but you did not give me any water for my feet. But she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You did not give me a kiss, but this woman, from the time I entered, has not stopped kissing my feet. You did not put oil on my head, but she has poured perfume on my feet. Therefore, I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, for she loved much. But he who has been forgiven little loves little. Then Jesus said to her, Your sins are forgiven. The other guests began to say among themselves, Who is this who even forgives sin? Jesus said to the woman, Your faith has saved you. Go in peace. This whole dialogue sounds a lot like different experiences with people in early on in Jesus' ministry. So I suspect at least at a minimum of two people pour perfume on Jesus. But what's really interesting about this is that I think in this context you can understand why we would want to deconstruct our agendas, why we would want to be in the place where we're able to offer this worship and this love and this expression that's kind of awkward and exposing, but really is genuine. And I think it is because she understands what Jesus has done for her. And I think in our culture, sin has gotten kind of not a bad name, it's kind of become a light thing. We hear over and over and over again, Jesus died for our sins. Good. Yeah, he did that, and now I can, and now I'm saved. But most of us, we have lost the weightiness of sin, and we've lost the sense of the holiness of God. So we don't think even, like David in Psalm 51, we don't think, against you alone, God, have I sinned. And we're not, because sin's like, okay, sin, you know, I'm done, God's forgiven me. And so it's very hard for us to want to deconstruct anything. And so I think the first thing we have to do is, if we're going to begin to think about the demands that we have on life and the agendas that we have, is that we need to understand that God, that the price that Christ paid for our sin, that our sin really does hold us in bondage. That it holds us in bondage to the demands and the agendas that we have for ourselves in the world. Sin, that's the bondage. That's all those demands that we, that somehow the emptiness in our life go away and that everything works correctly. And what Jesus offers this woman is freedom. And what Jesus offers you and I is freedom. The freedom to actually look at the demands in your life and the freedom to say, you know what, I don't have to have these to survive. My husband does not have to operate this way for me to be okay. I don't have to have my wife move this way towards me or be act this way for me to be okay. I don't need my schooling and my job and my everything just to work correctly. But, you know, I spend so much time talking to you guys and people outside of this community and looking in the mirror, and we just have this long list of demands that life works. And what it does is none of us hear each other. We don't really, truly hear the hearts of one another because we're so clouded by all these different expectations on life. And so, all I want to offer you tonight is to think about something. Just to think about, okay, what kind of demands on life do I have? What kind of demands do I have on my friends? How has that created a way where I'm not hearing what people are saying? What makes me angry? A good place to start is, what makes me angry? Think about what makes you angry, and immediately you will know that you have a demand on life. Immediately you have a demand that something works some way, and it's not, so you're angry. So that's really all I want to offer out of this, is that if you deconstruct the demands in your life, you will hear people better. And it will give you the freedom then to actually speak into one another's life in a way that's a bit deeper, to actually offer something to people that they really long for, because you're actually hearing it. So that's really all I have to say. So I'm going to open it up to you guys really quick, and you can respond, and if you have questions or observations or different things that you want to say about the passage, you may do that. If not, the question. Anybody have any comments, questions? Thoughts? Well, all I can say about feet and feet washing is it's the job of a servant, so it's the lowest kind of thing. John the Baptist, you know, that was kind of, he passed on his ministry, was to kind of say, I can't even take your sandals off and wash your feet. So, like, I can't even take the lowliest job, but I don't know. Maybe somebody else knows something more. It certainly is awkward to have your feet washed. Anybody else? Well, the disciples were in Matthew and in John, Judas. Yeah. That's a good question. You know, maybe. I mean, it's very interesting that, yeah, John is the only one that mentions that Judas is embezzling money. I don't know if everybody knew it and they're just not saying anything, or John knew it. I mean, Jesus seems to know what Simon's thinking, so I'm sure he has some kind of clue what Judas is. Right. Yeah, that's something to ponder. Why didn't Jesus call Judas on his embezzlement? Anybody else? He didn't have an agenda for it. Maybe. Anybody else? Right, and I don't know if the disciples were with him there. But I thought what was interesting was in chapter 25, what Rob was speaking on, remember, what was kind of identified the sheep and the goats were that they took care of the poor. And the sheep were the ones who took care of the poor. And so it seems like in the next chapter, it's almost like they're like, okay, well, why aren't we using this money to take care of the poor? And so the agenda that we're the kingdom, I don't know, maybe that's why they objected. I think it's just they wanted to be close to Jesus, and that was obviously Mary had a more intimate. Well, that's what he.
She was aware of that.
Well, that's what he says. He says that this was for my burial. It seems like she was. She at least heard. She was listening. She.
Right.
think we often feel other people presented. We feel like, oh, yeah, you expect something from me. And a lot of us are like, eh, yeah, don't do that to me. But a lot of us, well, I mean, you can see people presented. Anybody else? I think you're right. I think there's two things to walk away with. I think that what I'm trying to say is that as we deconstruct our agendas and things like that, that we are actually able to respond better when someone offers us kind of an exposing gift, when they go out and give us something expensive. We are able to feel more comfortable just worshiping God in whatever way that looks like. Because it's going to be, no matter how different, if it's dancing or sitting with your head bowed, it's still exposing. Or if it's, you know, serving somebody else. I think when we begin to remove life must work a certain way for me and just listen to people and begin to express worship to God and worship or just serving one another, it is exposing. Because we don't know how people will respond. We don't know how Jesus is going to respond. We don't know how all the people around us. I mean, dancing in the back like there is a very exposing thing. I would think. That's a good example of that. But just to close, let me add this to everything. That most of our demands and agendas in life come out of fear. I mean, if you can think of what am I afraid of, you can then kind of just look at how you have constructed your life. You know, fear of, you know, being exposed, fear that you can't survive in a certain condition or situation. I mean, the list can go on and on. But fear motivates the expectations that we place on one another and the expectations that we place on Jesus. that he come through a certain way, and that he make our lives a certain way, and we understand him, and he acts when we want him to act. And we begin to like put that those expectations on people, and it really does come out of a fear of exposure and a fear of things not being the way we want them to be. So, anyway, let's close in prayer. Dear God, thank you for the example of this woman, and I just ask that you would help me personally to see the demands that I place on my wife, on my kids, on the church, on the world around me, on you, that prevent me from listening and prevent me from worshiping and serving one another, serving other people. And I ask tonight, Lord, that you would continue to be present with us. And just thank you for your love for us. Amen. A couple ways to respond tonight. One's through offering. The other is through communion. If you are visiting with us, you don't have to give anything. Communion is Christ's body broken for us and his blood spilled out for us. If you can say you stand with Jesus in that, then you can take communion. There's a sinner's chair back there. That was Martin Luther's idea, a place where people who were solitary or pressed down by their own sin or other people's sin could come sit in the chair and the community would gather around them and pray for them. And so if you would like that, you can sit and some people will come and pray for you. And we're just going to listen to some music and then sing some songs. So let's do that together.